Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Fozzie Bear, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. Not only are you listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, but you're listening to a momentous occasion because it is the 250th episode of Fat Guys at the Movies, believe it or not.
What is that anniversary? Like, one is paper, 50's gold.
I think this is slugs.
Ooh, pretty.
Give us slugs.
Yes, please send those in the mail.
Yeah. Anyways, well, that would be snail mail if you sent slugs through the mail.
Zawo!
Ha!
Well done.
Well, of course, Fozzie, he's been on the show many times before. But before we go and remind everybody who he is, we're going to move on and do the paperwork. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and you know, listen to all our stuff and watch all our stuff. Well, we don't have a lot of stuff to watch anymore. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and we pop right up. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and... like our page, because we're narcissists, and you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We do, in fact, have a listener email that we weren't able to read last week because of time constraints. We will read it this week, thanks to Thomas from Seattle. We also have a voicemail line, 740-205-6456. If you owe us money, please call. If we owe you money, don't. Anyways, Fozzie, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just getting over a cold, as you can tell by my smoky, husky, sexy voice.
It's gotten better. When we first connected there, you're like, oh, wow.
Well, I've been downing Halls, Cherry Halls, and there's a part of me that gets really excited when I get sick because I know I can suck on Cherry Halls because I want these every single day. And I just know that I shouldn't. They're not candy. It's kind of medicine. So
it's kind of medicine?
Kind of medicine. So I shouldn't have these every day, but I want one. Like I want a cigarette every day. I want one of these all the time. And this is my one chance that I can have as many as I want. It's glorious.
I don't think they regulate that. I mean, if you go and you buy a big bag of Hall's cough drops, that's not like going and buying a whole bunch of, you know, cough syrup and trying to smurf it out and run your own meth lab or anything.
Well, no. I'm sure I could turn some drug into this. Maybe. I'm smart. I'm sure I can figure it out a way.
I is smart. I'll find some
challenge way to. Accepted.
Well, anyways, while we've got you here, because you've had some changes with some of the stuff that you do on, like, tell us a little bit about, remind everybody what you do and what you've what you have done and what's going on in your life in terms of your profession. I mean, you don't have to tell me. I'm like, oh well, I bought a new Anwar, and it's my, you know, no,
right.
I mean, like, because you used to do the podcast.
I did, and I went on hiatus for a little while, trying to figure out what the next step was going to be, and I finally decided the next step is just going to be to close the doors. I feel like I've accomplished everything I need to professionally with the podcast. So the doors are closed there. It's still up. Everybody can still access the shows. But now I'm going to move on to another project. I just don't know what yet. I'm still trying to work out the details, and I want to do it right. But I am blogging occasionally now. So I have a Tumblr account. That's where I set up just to start a quick and easy blog. It's called I Want to Work for the Onion.
Oh, that is actually your blog.
Then. Yes, it is. I want to work for the Onion at tumblr.tumblr.com or however you do that. So every once in a while I put up, you know, just funny little articles there. But other than that, I'm not doing anything. Other than talking to you, I got nothing.
Have you been in touch with the Onion and they're like, stop it?
I tweet them all the time and they don't care. That I saw an interview with one of the editor of the Onion, and people, and one of the questions asked was like, you know, how can people work for you? We get that question all the time. He was like, well, it doesn't help to like send in articles or blah blah blah. Like everything I was doing, the guy was like saying that is not what to do, and so it kind of felt like he's talking directly to me. So I felt like that was a win.
Well, that's good, though. That's good that you've got their attention. Well, you know, I imagine that the Onion, this is the reality with like a website like that, is they got a relatively small crew. I mean, they're not, they've got their like video side and they do fake video broadcast news. But when you're talking about just writing articles,
right?
It's like a picture and then a funny article. It doesn't take a whole lot of people to do that. They're not really doing investigative reporting.
No, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Any show.
It's all made up. So it's a lot easier to write, like, you know, when you have these, like, New York Times articles, it's a big expose on things. You know, it's not, it's pretty easy. And that takes a lot of work and sources and that sort of thing. Whereas you can just make it up.
I do.
If it's comedy.
Yeah. I get an idea and I'll churn one out in, like, 20 minutes and it's done.
So they probably have at most 10 people doing that for them. And they're like, yeah, we don't need it. When we need another person, we'll come find you.
Right, exactly. So until then, I'll just keep blogging for myself.
Yeah, no, I know. That makes sense. Totally makes sense. So, well, I hope the Onion gets wind of you.
Thank you.
If that makes a joke. So that's good. It's good that you've got the podcast was definitely had a good run.
Yeah, it did. And I have no regrets about closing the doors because I feel like everything I wanted to do was done.
Yes.
So anything else would have just been, it's like when a show goes on, it's like Roseanne, that final last season of Roseanne.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have just quit while they were ahead, and that's what I decided to do. Before,
there's so
like,
many, there's the final, like, or then there's sometimes are heartbreaking. Like I was having a conversation with somebody online about James Bond, and I was mentioning how, did you know that every single James, all the famous James Bonds, with the exception of Daniel Craig, all the ones that had long runs, all were, or they originally wanted him for something else. Like when Roger Moore, when they first started James Bond, they actually wanted Roger Moore to play James Bond, but he was doing The Saint, so they got Sean Connery. So Sean Connery was the second choice. And then when it came time for, well, I mean, let's just skip Lazenby for a minute.
Okay.
And then you had when Roger Moore was going to do it, they originally wanted Timothy Dalton, but Timothy Dalton wasn't able to do it, so they went and got Roger Moore. Then they wanted Pierce Brosnan, and he wasn't available because he was doing the fourth odious season of Remington Steele.
Hey, now.
Or the fifth season. Whatever last season, which was terrible,
I know.
By the way. It made no sense. Oh, my gosh, what's
sorry,
going on?
Nothing.
Are aliens landing?
Yes, sorry. That goes well into our first movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, let's use that as our segue.
Sorry about that.
We're going to talk about Chronicle, and this is a new found footage movie about 20-somethings getting superpowers.
Was it an accident, Andrew? Andrew?
I'm worried about Andrew.
Listen to me. We can't screw around with this. It's
this
too dangerous. Andrew, it's
wait,
not a game.
Andrew!
Stop this right now!
Who's making the head sound?
Guess what is that?
All right, dude, we're going inside.
Steve, wait up.
Matt, look at this!
Holy...
Now, do you you love these found footage movies?
I do.
You?
I'm a sucker for it. I fall for it almost every single time.
Do you not like them? I know you love like the Paranormal Activity ones, but you also like stuff like. What was the one with the Cloverfield?
You know that's my favorite movie in the history of the world ever.
Is that your favorite one of all
time? It is. It's definitely in my top three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you do love that sort of thing. See, I think the genre is getting a little tired.
I can agree with that. There's sometimes, like, what was the Moon movie that came out last year?
You know, I liked that one. I actually thought that one was okay. Apollo 18.
It didn't work for me.
Oh.
Yeah. But this one, like, a friend of our friend, Gray Drake, Max Landis, directed this. And I've heard him on her show, and I've seen some of his work before, and I really trust him. He has a great eye and a great sensibility. So I was looking forward to it.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Well, I'm looking forward cautiously, because... I think that the genre is just getting tired. I've heard some good things about it. They didn't screen it for us here in Columbus, but I've heard some good things about it. I saw some people tweeting about it after seeing their regional screenings, and apparently it's got some good things happening. I think the found footage genre is going to burn itself out. Do you know why I think you liked why you didn't like Apollo 18?
Why is that?
As opposed to, I got like 15 seconds. Here's why. You like the voyeuristic aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is just people with their video cameras happening to capture stuff. Apollo 18 was them documenting it. So you immediately just kind of that tone, because it wasn't interesting. It wasn't them having candid conversations because they were documenting it for quote unquote NASA.
True. I'll counter that after we come back from break. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We were just talking about Chronicle, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, and I proposed why I thought that you liked, why you didn't like Apollo 18, because it wasn't as voyeuristic as your other stuff.
Well, there was that aspect of it, because I do, like, you know, a lot of people didn't like Paranormal Activity 2, because they felt like nothing happened. I loved it, and I could, because I'm like, ooh, I wonder if they're going to make toast, because I can just watch people do their homework, or, you know, like, sit and watch TV. I am voyeuristic that way. But one of the reasons Apollo 18 didn't work for me as well is because the believability factor of this being found footage just didn't work.
Well, if you watch the movie, you're like, they're like, oh, they never heard from him again. I'm like, well, how'd they get the film?
Yeah, that it blew up. Obviously, it blowed up. There's no way to get that footage. So it made no sense whatsoever. That was
So that's where it stuck for you. You're like, giant giant monster coming down from space and laying waste to New York City, mm-hmm. and a battery that lasts 18 hours.
Right.
Totally believable.
Absolutely.
But the fact that the footage was lost on the moon, that's the sticking point.
Yeah, we can't go to the moon. What are we, aliens? Please.
What are we, alien rocks?
People
on the moon?
People can't go to the moon. Yeah, the whole thing was just ridiculous to me.
Well, let's talk about something that's not so ridiculous.
Okay.
The next movie is Big Miracle. And in this movie, whales are trapped under the ice in Alaska, and it's up to an eco-wacky Drew Barrymore and a whimsical newscaster and the son of a whale hunter to free them.
I think Barrow might have one great story left in her.
This is solid ice. It goes for 5 miles from here to the open ocean.
Three gray whales are now trapped in walls of ice 6 inches thick.
You have whales in trouble, and you didn't call me?
I didn't call you because there's nothing you can do.
There's always something you can do.
Rachel, and this... Bam Bam.
Everything's gonna be okay.
We will do everything we can to help these poor creatures.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Do you know anything about this movie?
Well, I know the previews, and I put something on Facebook one day, and I was just as a little joke, I was like, this movie looks ridiculous. I was like, what are the chances that three whales named Bam Bam, Pebbles, and Fred all end up in the same place at the same time? But then somebody replied, they're like, you shut your mouth. I remember this story well, and like it captured my heart, and when it was going down, all I could think about, and I wrote letters to my congressman and blah, blah, blah. I had no idea this ever happened.
It's actually a true story, and that's what's so bizarre about it is it is a true story, but when its movie starts, it says inspired by true events, which is always a red flag, because what that means is like something happened and that's kind of true.
Right.
But all this other stuff, we're just going to make up.
Yeah.
And like the whole thing is, and it's one of those movies that when you actually go research the true story, it's actually kind of insulting to the people involved. Because it is true, these three. What happens is in the Beaufort Sea, which is up on the north coast of Alaska, off of Barrow,
mm-hmm, right next to Russia,
which is of course, yeah, which is right where they have the that's in the Arctic Circle, so it's very, very cold. These whales got trapped under the ice. Not that they trapped under the ice, but they only had a small hole, and the ice was like 5 miles to the sea, so they couldn't have gotten to the sea.
Oh.
And so they would have drowned once it froze over, because it was in October, so it started to get colder and colder. And people found out about it, and it made a big news story. And it is kind of interesting, because in the movie they have clips of, you know, back when nightly news was like a big deal.
Right.
Like Peter Jennings and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw all doing their news. They had clips of them talking about this. The funny thing is there certain liberties they took. Like in the movie, John Krasinski from The Office plays the newscaster, and he's the one who discovers the whales. And then it was him who brings national attention. And then wacky Drew Barrymore plays like this psychotic, like Earth First Greenpeace person. And I'm all for the environment, but she's a nutcase in the movie. You know, she's one of those people. And then she comes and brings national attention. And then it's like, it's infected with Hollywood being like, look how important we are. We are news people, and we're the reason that these whales were saved. You know, that's sort of the set. But if the real story was, a whaler found them.
Ooh.
And the whalers started kind of working because they weren't the kind of whales that they would harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this group of whalers that did it, and then the news kind of picked up on it. So the news people weren't the ones who discovered this in the first place. And the reason I think that this is so insulting is because they could have had that happen in the movie. But no, it has to be the media that brings all the attention to it. So
interesting.
But here's the thing. It's a cute movie. It's sort of like Dolphin Tale in the sense where it is based on a true story, because Dolphin Tale was based on a true story. But they lay it on really thick, and it gets really cheesy at moments. And they do attempt to kind of show all these sides, because what happens is, of course, an oil company helps them do it because it's them trying to make good with the PR. And then they get a Russian ship involved. So it was this weird little 80s let's all hold hands and sing together kind of story that was very human interesty. So... I mean, it's okay. I took my son, and he loved it. He's 8.
Yeah, yeah. I always, like, I know people love whales. I think whales are stupid. I'll tell you why. Because, like,
because they never learn to walk,
yeah,
idiots.
Yeah, that's basically it. Like, if you need oxygen, don't live in the ocean. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
It's stupid. So I could not care less. I'm sure you're going to get letters for that, but they think they're retarded.
They'll be like, that Fozzie Bear guy, what an idiot.
Yeah, direct the letters to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a cute enough movie, but you know they take liberties with it, and they lay it on so thick at times, and it's so cheesy. And that's the way Dolphin Tale was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to say I'm really on the fence. It kind of rucks, kind of sucks. It's not a great movie, but it's a movie that I think the kids will like.
Yeah, and if I went to it, honestly, I would fall for it. I know you'd come out in tears.
Oh, I'm, yeah, you'd be sucker. Like, oh, yay.
I know.
So, but they were not originally, the actual real whales were not Wilma Pebbles and Bam Bam. They were some other, they named them for like, they named them Inuit names because it was an Inuit village that found them. And then they named it something, but it's cuter to call them Pebbles, Wilma, and Bam Bam.
Yeah, that's adorable. I like
or
that.
Or Fred, Wilma, and Bam Bam. So, anyways. I'm right on the fence on that one. Kind of rucks, kind of socks. The next one.
Wait till it's on ABC Family.
Yeah, exactly. The next one is The Woman in Black, in which Daniel Radcliffe plays a man settling the estate of a widow to discover she is still lurking around as a vengeful ghost.
Please don't go to Ilmarsh House.
If we open the door to superstition, where does that lead?
I feel she's there, trying to reach me.
I believe even the most rational minds can play tricks with the dark.
Who's there?
They prey on those most in need.
Are you interested in seeing
this
one?
The trailer sold me. And it's such a great story. You know, it was originally a story. I mean, it was filmed, what, in the 40s, 50s, 60s? I don't know. With it was a Hammer film, right?
This one is, yeah, it actually has Hammer logo.
Yeah, it was originally a Hammer film with, you know, like the original Hammer cast. But they did that, and they did a play as well. And like every iteration of this story has been done really, really well in the past. Uh-huh. So I'm hoping that this one is as well. And I love Daniel Radcliffe. I'm not a Harry Potter fan, but I have big plans for him. I want him to be a big star. I find him so charming, and I really want him to break out and like do a movie that's successful.
I will, let me say this. I applaud him for doing something slightly. I mean, it's still sort of, it's British and it's supernatural, but it's a diversion. It's not Harry Potter.
Right.
So I give him credit for the fact that you don't see Harry Potter on screen necessarily.
Good.
Because he's a different kind of, he definitely plays a different character. There is something, and I don't want to spoil anything, but at the end, I remember watching the ending and going, well, he would have had to have looked at this script and been like, really, this is going to happen? Because this happens in this Harry Potter movie.
Oh.
It's not cheesy or whatever. It's just, I everything up to that point was, I'm like, then suddenly I had a Harry Potter flashback. But overall, he does a good job, and he's a good actor, and it is spooky. Here's the problem with it. It's a better movie than any audience you're going to see it with.
Okay, explain that.
It's a slow burn. Mm-hmm. It's a relatively simple story because it's just a guy who goes and he's trying to settle this estate, and all this creepy stuff happens for like an hour, you know. And there's a good there's a whole series through it where it's just him going through the house and it being creepy and loud scares. And it does have those very cheap jump scares where walking, then all of a sudden, you know, a rat runs out and it like explodes onto the scene. I mean, short of throwing a cat in front of the camera. And those are effective. The problem is the audience just want to start walking around and punching people because American audiences are stupid. American audience have short attention spans, so they're checking phones. They're chatting with each other. So kind of any audience you're going to see it in is going to ruin the movie.
Gotcha.
So either go like at like a 10 a.m. showing where no one else is there or wait till it comes on video. Even though I still think it kind of rocks as a movie.
Or it'll be on ABC Family too. They love Daniel Radcliffe.
Maybe. It could happen. But, I mean, it's good. It's effective. It's definitely creepy. There's not a whole lot to it, but don't expect a whole lot. It just, for just your standard scary ghost story, it works.
All right. I'm in.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's it. We're going to go to a break.
Be right back.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground.
crawling down through the muck. Yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are the infamous middle segment where now Fozzie can swear and be dirty and blue and all that good stuff.
Phooey.
Nice.
Yeah.
I will say I had to hold this off until the middle segment because you were talking about being sick. The first segment, and this, in the, you know, the first set, for those who are new to the show, the first, second, and fourth segment air on Wyoming radio out in Cheyenne on KGAB. And so we have to be careful with what we say because, you know, it's a conservative town.
Red staters.
It's a red state. And they're all, and it's also on the public air. So we can't be like, fuck, fuck, shit, shit, boobs, boobs. They don't even like us to say boobs, which I take issue with, but that's okay.
Right. I would
they too. Prefer us to say titty sacks. anyways, the they said, you had said you were sick, so you were talking about using cough drops, and you're like, I can suck on Cherry Halls. And I'm like, that totally sounds like a gay porno name.
Is Cherry Halls, that has to be a porn name anyway, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be a porn star right now,
that's
as
perfect.
We speak.
Yeah, well, because it has that, it almost sounds like you say Cherry Balls, but Cherry Halls.
Yeah.
It's not like Misty Rain, which is a very good, you know, but Cherry Halls has an ambiguity to it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like some knockoff porn star too. Her name is like, I'm Ludens.
Yes. I'm Vix Vapo Rub. Come here.
Come and get it, big boy.
Yeah, so I had to say that because I couldn't let that go. I couldn't let that just disappear.
You've gone through two segments with that, sitting on that. Congratulations for holding that under your hat.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, that happens. I have that control.
I wouldn't.
No, I know. That's why I didn't say anything then. Because you're like, could you go back and listen to this? When this airs, you're going to have to go back and listen. You'd be like, oh, I could see Kevin squirming in his seat right now.
I think there was a time when I was on before where I let a superlative fly. And I think you had to edit me a couple times.
I've had to edit some people. Every now and then somebody would be like, this one guy, Marco Cerritos, was on. And he said fuck, and I'm like, you can't say that. He's like, oh fuck.
Nah.
So I'm like, stop.
Yeah, that's the automatic reaction.
And then when it came time for him to go to the middle segment, I was like, you can swear. He's like, oh, fiddlesticks.
Right.
Oh, thanks. It's only fun when you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
So anyways, those are the movies: Woman in Black, Big Miracle, Chronicle. Not a bad. You know what's funny? I'm starting to more and more. Not longer I do movie reviews, I'm becoming more and more appreciative of movies in the early part of the year. Granted, there's shit out there. There's bad stuff, One for the Money or The Devil Inside, which was terrible, although you'd love it.
I'm sure I would.
But once you start getting into late January, February, March, you actually get some interesting stuff because it's these movies that they're not the giant set pieces of the Avengers or these big. You know, it's not a Harry Potter movie or Transformers, so it's not the tentpole releases. So you get some interesting stuff that you had that last year with movies like Limitless, I thought was neat. I love Drive Angry, The Adjustment Bureau, Source Code. There are all these really innovative, neat movies in the beginning of the year, and I think we're getting some of them this year.
Didn't you and Neil do an episode completely dedicated to that?
No.
Or a segment? I can't remember who it was.
Maybe I talked quite a bit about it last year in the spring.
Because there was maybe it was actually over on what's the other show on your network?
You mean Idiot Boxers or Celluloid Spotlight with Marilyn Hash?
Oh no, not that one at all. But it was a show of someone you know. They did a show completely dedicated to great films that had come out in January and February through history.
Okay. No, it wasn't me, but I'm sure there was plenty of stuff to talk about that. Yeah.
And, I mean, they went back to, you know, the 70s. They're like, you know, you might not remember this, but I'll just say, I don't know, The Godfather came out in January or whatever.
Yeah.
So they gave examples of really, really good, strong movies that did come out at a certain time. And I can see why it would work, because at this time you're not vying for awards anymore. You're not trying to make a movie to be an awards movie. You're not trying to make a movie just to be big and overblown for, like, a summer blockbuster. You're just making a good, fun, strong movie. A lot of times it fails. But you're not pandering to people.
But you can have a movie. And this is, I think, what's neat about the early part of the year is you can have a movie. Take The Grey, for example, which is an original movie. They'd had some problems.
Right.
It didn't even make $20 million this weekend.
Well,
but it's considered
a huge hit.
But it's a huge hit because it came out in January.
Oh.
Whereas same actor, Liam Neeson, same director, Joe Carnahan did the A-Team in 2010, made like $25 million in its opening weekend. It was a big dud.
Oh, gotcha.
Now, it had a much bigger budget, obviously, but the expectations, that's why these movies are so overblown. And then every now and then you get these interesting sleeper hits in the summer. But I was actually having a conversation with somebody last night after seeing Woman in Black. And we were talking about Hostel. And I actually like the Hostel movies. Well, the first two.
Oh, you don't like the second one?
No, the first two. The third one's terrible.
Right.
That was a direct-to-video one. Takes place in Las Vegas. Makes no sense. But I like the second one even more. And the first movie came out. Now, the second one didn't do as well as the first one, but it was released like in June, which is the worst time to release a movie like that.
True.
That's a movie that you stick into the January release, which is why Hostel did so well. Hostel opened up against Blood Rain. That's what it was vying against in the winter of 2005 when it came out, and then like the summer of 2007 when they did Hostel 2. It was opening up against, you know, whatever, Spider-Man 3 or something like that.
Yeah, Hostel 2 is a great film as well. I've watched it again recently, and I appreciate it a lot more than the original.
Yeah, I think he actually did something more with it. Now, people who are just predisposed, I know people that are just like, oh, it's absolute trash and garbage. And I'm like, okay, just because you're uncomfortable watching it doesn't mean it's a worthless film.
Yeah.
I had the same issue with like a Serbian film, which I know a lot of people just couldn't get past the subject matter in the Serbian film.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And I'm like, no, Serbian film's a good movie. It's uncomfortable to watch.
Well, what was that movie? Funny Games.
I hated that film,
and I'll never go back and watch it again. But I recently listened to another podcast, and they dissected it, and they talked about it and how important it was to film and like what the film was trying to say. And I'm like, all right, fine, I appreciate that. I don't have to watch it, and I don't have to like it, and I'm not going to. So it can have its place.
I saw what he was doing
right with
it. I just thought it was too long of an exercise to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was too single purposed on that. I can't defend Funny Games.
No, I hate that film. I'll never watch it again. But if you want to like it, God love you.
I've never seen the original though, so I'd be curious. Everyone's like, "Oh, it's the same movie." I'm like, "I'll bet you it's not."
Well, yeah, it's Swedish too, or something, right?
It's German or something like that, or Austrian. Whatever it is. I actually interviewed the director. I hated the movie, and I was able to actually interview the director, and I only insulted him a little bit.
That's got to be rough. You know, I was actually thinking about when Chronicle comes out, you know, well, when Gray has to review Chronicle, because she's such good friends with Max Landis. He's been on her show, and they've done projects together, et cetera, et cetera. I'm wondering how you walk that tightrope if it's not a good film.
Well, and it's also tough as a critic, because, like, for me, first of all, I don't follow celebrities on, like, Twitter, so.
Right.
I follow a couple porn stars, but that's just because they tweet out nude pictures of themselves. Although, you know, it's funny, it was one time I got drunk one night, I was drinking late, and it was after a live tweet, and so I'd had a bit to drink, and I just started following some porn stars, and I woke up the next morning, and I found all these porn stars in my feed, and, like, some of them don't even, like, tweet out pictures. I'm like, what the fuck's the point of that?
Yeah.
If I got a porn star, I want to see some nudity. And I know I can go to the internet and find tons of pictures of them, but it's just kind of neat for that to just show up in my Twitter. Like, I follow Tabitha Stevens, and she's in her 40s, but I watched her back in the early 90s when she was, you know, younger, and she was much more active in the industry. She'll still tweet out pictures. She's in great shape for woman of any age, really. And like, I follow like Riley Steele. She's always tweeting out pictures of herself. But like, some of them I followed somebody, and I'm just like, they were just like, they're talking about other shit. I'm like, I don't care what you have to say about, you know, anything.
Well, I follow porn stars as well. And, you know, every once in a while, you know, a lot of times it's fun and it's pictures. And and porn stars have a great sense of humor. I got to say that.
Do,
the majority, I usually follow the ones that do, I guess. I've been lucky. They're really, really funny. But there's one that I kind of know. And he's, you know, we've met a couple times through actually the Horror Hounds that we go to.
Who's that?
I don't know if I want to say his name, but because, you know, he's a really, really nice guy. But I just started following him because, you know, he was in porn. But then every once in a while, he'll say these things like, you know, my heart is breaking and I don't know if I can go on like this, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, that is not what a porn star does. You tweet naked pictures.
There's one of my followers, her name's Riley Steele, and she's beautiful. She was in Piranha.
Oh yeah,
she was the blonde in Piranha, and she's like 23. I mean, she's young. So first of all, just in general, nobody at age 23 has anything interesting to say. I'm sorry. Right. Just don't, because you're young and stupid. I'm sorry.
And I know people are listening to this, and they're like, wait, I'm 23, and they're going to write an email.
They're going to be like, fuck you, Kevin.
We're not going to read it.
No. But anyway, so she tweeted out, she's like, I got the worst news ever, or something like that. And then she went on to tweet about, oh, and I'm going to go shopping now. And I'm here thinking, going, what could be the worst news ever? I mean, it's bad enough. You can say normal people. You're just running around going, you know, I hear the worst news ever. You know, somebody got hurt in their family or they got fired or whatever. What's the worst news ever for a porn star? I'm like, what did you catch?
Yeah.
You know, I
that's
mean.
That's where her mind goes immediately, isn't it?
Yeah, immediately. And then she's like, oh, I got to go shopping. I got a smoothie. Here's a picture of me naked. Beep. And I'm like, and I'm just curious as to what constitutes the worst news ever for a porn star.
Yeah. I think we know.
It's like, you know, like if like Kim Kardashian, if she were, now, who I don't follow, by the way, but if she were to say, I got the worst news ever, I'm like, God knows what. She broke a nail.
Right. Split end. Know?
Yeah. So I saw a picture of myself 20 years from now and I'm huge.
Right.
Is that going to be her tweet? So anyways, that's, I don't know why. How do we get on that?
I don't know. Where did this come from?
But I don't follow. I think it was me saying I just don't follow celebrities. Oh, I know. And I don't follow celebrities. But I bitch about celebrities all the time. And I've heard people say, well, you should always use their Twitter name if they're on. I'm like, I'm not going to say something deliberately mean about Katherine Heigl.
Right.
And use her Twitter name because that's just mean. And that's, I'm not here to insult Katherine Heigl personally. I'm here to insult Katherine Heigl professionally. And that's why I just talk about her movies and, you know.
But, you know, every once in a while, this is a little diversion. I do tweet mean things to Whitney Cummings about Whitney.
She deserves it.
I know. But, you know, I got to say, I got to qualify this, that I like Whitney Cummings a lot. I love her stand-up. I think she's ballsy and funny and, like, she's kind of, you know, like, no holds barred. I like that in a stand-up. But the reason that I'm so offended by the show is because it's not Whitney Cummings.
Because it sucks.
It's awful. Yeah, it is awful. But also, it's just not – it's not her. And, like, the main thing I'm looking forward to with this show is when it ends and she can be completely honest about what an awful experience it was.
Yeah.
And you know she's going to do those interviews and it's going to be in her stand-up, et cetera, et cetera.
And it will. But see, here's the thing. You don't have a show named after yourself. And then be like, oh, I had no control over it. Fuck you. You do have control. It's named after you.
Yeah.
I honestly think what happened, I just don't think she knows how to do a stand-up. She knows how to do stand-up. I'm not wild about her stand-up, but she's okay.
Yeah.
But she just had no idea how to do a sitcom.
No, she has no, and watching, the first time I watched it, it made me realize how spoiled I am by sitcoms now. Because, you know, shows like 30 Rock and The Office and, you know, and even How I Met Your Mother, which I think is really well-crafted and scripted and has a lot of really interesting turns. Those are really good. But then when I see this, I'm like, oh, this is what sitcoms used to be.
It's almost fun to watch terrible sitcoms.
Yeah, this is how crap it used to be. And people used to love this. Well, like I did when I was a kid.
Did you watch Work It at all?
No. In the one and a half episodes they aired, no.
They literally, because Meryl on the Idiot Boxers told me, oh, that's how terrible this was. And I went and I watched it online because I was curious because I'm like, because I thought it looked terrible. And then he talked about it. And I'm like, well, I want to see how bad it was. And it was awful. And then when I found out they canceled it after two, I went and I watched the second episode to say I've watched every single episode that ever aired.
Yeah. I celebrate the entire catalog.
Yeah. God, it's so bad. It's so bad. It's just incompetently bad. And this is what's amazing about this. There's so much surrounding like a show like Work It. The fact, A, that it got a pilot made, that they greenlit a pilot is bad enough. But then they greenlit at least six episodes to do like an early series, a mid-season replacement or whatever. So you have to sit there and be like, they had many opportunities to say no.
Well, and you know every single pitch, every single sentence during the pitch was like, Bosom Buddies did it. And if Bosom Buddies can pull it off, we can be Bosom Buddies. It'd be like Bosom Buddies. They were just trying to capitalize. But that was a certain time when that could have worked. We're not in the Bosom Buddies era anymore.
It's like you could never do like Three's Company.
Exactly.
Again, Three's Company was a brilliant show, totally worked in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't sit there, you can't be like, a guy's living with two girls. And you're like, I know people who do that.
So scandalous.
I know. And then he's like, well, he's going to pretend he's gay. And I'm like, what? It would be the worst pitch ever today.
Yeah.
But it worked in the 70s. And it was hilarious in the 70s. But I can't imagine that there's any sort of landlord now that's like, oh, you can't have men and women living together.
Right. No, everybody's just so happy to get paid. They just want
money. Just like, I don't care who you are. You could be terrorists as long as you pay the bill on time.
Right.
You know? Yeah, but work, it was so terrible. And then the other thing is every single person in that show had to have they won the audition. You know, so you know that the woman who played his wife at work, it came when she's like, I got a sitcom.
Yeah. Oh, that is like, heartbreaking.
I feel so bad for you.
Did you ever watch this old show? It used to be on Showtime called Beggars and Choosers, I think it was called. Do you remember it at all?
I've never heard of it.
It ran maybe two seasons on Showtime, and it was about a network, and it was behind the scenes of a network, and it really showed. I'm trying to remember some of the people who were on it. I know Evie used to be on Days of Our Lives. Forget it. I don't remember anybody who was on it. But anyway,
you never remember anybody who's on anything. You're like that person who was in that show.
Yeah.
The blonde, who's not blonde, but I just remember her as blonde.
Right. Yeah, we went through this. But anyway, it was a great show, and it showed this one. There was a one actress. They were very happy because they had got this actress who was like, they were painting her as like a Sally Field type. You know, she had won an Oscar, and she had been in the business for years, and she was highly respected. She was finally going to do a sitcom for them, and they wanted to do something really respectful and or respective of her. So they originally had her be a businesswoman whose husband leaves her, and then she has to, like, you know, figure out how to be single again in her 50s, which could be interesting. They started to work it, and they filmed a little bit of it, and it didn't work. So then they decided to change it up. They're like, well, we're going to make her more working class. So they changed everything, and then that wasn't working. They're like, okay, well, we need a precocious kid. And so they got a precocious kid to come in. They're like, well, this isn't working. And so they got this, like, character who is obviously, like, an Urkel character to come in as well. And it showed the progression of this show. And
it showed them making a camel is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah. And it showed her struggling. She was like, I'm sorry, yesterday I was a businesswoman, and today I'm a mom, and I just got a script at midnight, and I can't remember my lines. And she's a really respected actress. And then they finally filmed the pilot, and they tested it, and it didn't work, so they scrapped the whole idea. Wow. And it really – and they showed her, and she was crying about it, and it shows how heartbreaking that is. To them, it's just a business, but for her, she was like, oh, this is going to be great, and I can have a career, and I can kind of coast for a while, and et cetera, et cetera. But then they're just throwing all this shit to see what's going to work.
Yeah. So, well, you know,
can find that, I definitely recommend people looking up Beggars and Choosers. This is a really good show.
There was a Family Guy episode like that a year or so ago where Brian writes this, like, heartfelt novel, and they're going to adapt it into a TV series. And it goes from being this very, you know, cerebral thing, and it just turns into this wacky sitcom. Where James Woods goes back to college and ends up rooming with his daughter.
Yeah.
And it's nothing at all. Like, and that's true. Well, it was funny is I've talked about this on the Idiot Boxers. There's a show that's currently on television now, and I'm not going to trash it because I think it's terrible, but I know the people who make it.
Interesting.
Personally. Okay. I've hung out with them, good friends. So I can't trash it, but it's a terrible show. It's so bad from, like, all parts of it. And it's doing okay, but the only reason it's doing okay is because it has a great lead-in. I have a feeling that it's going to be like Whitney, where once they take it out from – because they took Whitney out from following The Office in its weakest season ever, and it was still losing viewers into Whitney. And then the only reason they kept Whitney around, my theory, is so they could drop it in at the beginning and use it as a lead-in for Chelsea. And Chelsea's terrible, too.
Yeah.
And this is the same kind of thing where it's got a fantastic lead-in, and it's on a great network. And the second they move it, it's going to just crash and burn. And I want it to succeed because it's my buddies, and I want them to do well. I want them to have a good hit. I want them to have a hit on their hands. But I don't know if this thing's going to survive.
So when we're not recording, you're going to tell me what the show is.
I'll tell you what it is.
All right,
but
good.
But I'm just in general, I'm not trashing it because I want to be impartial here. But it's very hard. It's very hard because I watch it. I'm just like, oh god, this is so bad. But I like. And what's really funny is one of the guys. It's a guy I used to work. I used to make films with this guy, who works on the show, and he would just rip apart sitcoms all the time. And I'd be like, if he didn't work on this show, he would be tearing it apart.
Oh, of course.
You know, but you know, hey, it's what you work on, and it's your money at this point. It's your bread and butter. So
well, and this Beggars and Choosers, it was Ann Archer who played this actress on the show, and by the end of it, they put a pie in her face, and you know, the studio audience was going crazy, but she was almost in tears at this point, and it's so heartbreaking, and that's exactly how I see Whitney happening. Like, she's putting on this brave face, and she's tweeting every day about, like, watch my show! But you know she's slowly dying inside.
Well, you know she's like, it's like, this did not turn out to be the way I wanted to. You know, she got the... Yeah. I can't defend Whitney. I still think it's... I'm sorry. Maybe if she comes out and we'll hear that. But I mean, it's... I just don't want it to be like one of these things, like, if you look at, like, David Fincher as a director... And people are like, David Fincher's never made a bad movie. I'm like, what about Alien 3? And they're like, well, that wasn't David Fincher's fault. That was the studio. And I'm like, no. It was totally David Fincher's fault. He didn't know how to play ball with the studio. He didn't know how to deal with the... You can't sit there and say that it was all the studio's fault for meddling. Because there's a lot of people who make movies, even first-time directors, who know how to get around that and know how to play the game. But David Fincher was too stubborn to deal with it, and so he ended up making a terrible movie.
I will argue that I really enjoy Alien 3. I love that movie. We were actually just talking about that the other night. I love the fact that one of the behind-the-scenes stuff, I love the little stories that go along with it. And Sigourney Weaver, they wanted to do some reshoots after she had been done for a while. They're like, we need to shave your head again. She's like, all right, I will do it, but you have to give me $1 million.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. And so she shaved her head. And then right after that, she went and did 1492, I think.
Oh, my God.
And because she's like, the only reason I did that movie is so I could have big, beautiful hair and a pretty dress and sit in a nice chair. She's like, I had like lice for several months and my head shaved and I was filthy. So I was like, God, you go, Sigourney Weaver. I love her.
I'd shave my head for $50. I'd shave my head anyways.
Yeah.
I'd grow my hair back for $1 million. Let me say that.
Yeah. I have very low prices for everything.
there's not a whole lot I wouldn't do for $50.
I know. That's sad to say, but we're opening it. We're opening the floodgates now. Send us
emails. But like Meatloaf, I won't do that.
Zawo.
Let's talk about the box office real quick, because I think what got into that was like with Katherine Heigl, who I'll bitch about these, and I'll blame Katherine Heigl for stuff like One for the Money.
You should.
And yeah, exactly. But I won't tweet to her. And I'm sure if I met Katherine Heigl, and now if you meet them in a professional, screw the professional thing, because they need to be nice to you or you're not going to give them press. And that's just the way it is. And I always hate that. This is why I hate award season, because I hate people like going, oh, I interviewed George Clooney today. And you're like, he doesn't give a shit about you.
I know.
He smiled at you and shook your hand. And that's great. You got a picture with him. Awesome. He has no idea who you are. It's just because you meet somebody famous doesn't mean, I mean, it just, I hate that attitude. And they parody it great in the movie Death Race 2000, the original, where you've got the one interviewer. I think I said this last week when I was talking with Rob Hunter. You got the one interviewer and she's like, oh, so-and-so, a very good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And that's exactly the way these movies are. But anyways, I'll bitch about Katherine Heigl and One for the Money, but I'm not going to bitch her face. I mean, I think like, I'll give you another example. I think Kevin Smith's an absolute douchebag. I think his douchebag has been revealed. His douchebaggery has been revealed over the years. If I ran into Kevin Smith somewhere, I wouldn't be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'd be polite. And if he were to then impress me on something, he'd be like, well, did you like Cop Out? I go, no, I thought it was terrible. Well, that's his own fault for asking.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, I go out of my. I like to be nice to everybody, to their face. I was raised right. I'm nice to people's faces. Yeah. You know, I'll talk shit about them, but also a lot of times I feel that it's not like, you know, for the longest time I hated Gwyneth Paltrow. I've kind of come back around, but like, and that wasn't even correct. I hated Gwyneth Paltrow's brand. I hate how she marketed herself, because like, I'm sure Gwyneth Paltrow is a perfectly pleasant person.
Like, most people are. That's the thing. Most people, you can go out and hang out with them. They're probably great people to hang out with.
Yeah. Like, even somebody that I kind of despise, Sarah Palin, like, if I met her, and, like, I always say, like, if she were my friend's mom, I would think she was a hoot.
Oh, like, I'm sure she's hilarious, and I'm sure you'd love to just go shoot and moose with her.
Right. Like, you know, she'd, like, make us Hot Pockets and bring them down to the basement, and she'd be, like, a great mom, and she'd be fun. And, like, we wouldn't have to get into politics. She'd just be a fun lady. But, like, I hate her brand, how she's marketing herself and putting herself out in the public. And that's the same way with a lot of celebrities, too. I just hate the way that they portray themselves. Yeah. I'm sure they're perfectly pleasant. Even Katherine Heigl. We could have tea. We could hang out.
Yeah, and I'm sure that if you met Katherine Heigl in a it's one of those things, if you meet him in a social situation, not if you, I mean, there, if you meet him professionally, some of them, I've heard stories from the set of like Grey's Anatomy when she was on there that she was just a pain to deal with. And, but that, again, it's a professional thing. I'm sure if you hung out with her and you're having tea at her house, does she serve tea? I don't know. But if you were, you know.
But hey. Gwyneth Paltrow does. Oh, she's so pretentious.
But she does. She has tea. She lived in England.
Yeah. She has, like, she tea
named
time.
Her, she named her kid Kumquat or whatever.
Ugh. Can't stand her brand.
So the Grey won with almost $20 million, which was fantastic, by the way.
You know, I had heard 32. That's why I was surprised when you said that. That's not right at all? Or...
Not at all.
Interesting. That's what I think I read that just earlier today.
Where did you read that?
I don't know. I read a lot of things.
Like,
I read all the papers. I read all of them.
I read it on the back of a Tabasco bottle.
I thought I had heard 32, but 20 is still respectable.
20 is great for a January release. Underworld Awakening came in second, and then One for the Money came in third. Here's the thing that I'm bitching about with One for the Money.
All right. Lay it on me.
It made $11.5 million, came in third, and they're considering that good.
Oh. Ew.
But here's the thing, and the reason for it is because they were projecting it. The early projections were saying it was going to be like $5 million, which would have been an absolute. So it didn't completely crash and burn. It just failed.
Oh, good.
So that's considered good. And it's amazing how perspective is. And I heard somebody be like, oh, with her star power. I'm like, hold on a second. Katherine Heigl does not have star power.
No.
She does not. She's never had star power. It's like Ryan Reynolds. People say, well, he's a big star. I'm like, go back, go to Box Office Mojo and look at his box office. And the only big, his biggest movies are stuff like Wolverine, which he was in, but it wasn't because he was in it, you know? Right. The biggest movie he was in that he kind of headlined was The Proposal, but that was more Sandra Bullock than anything else. And Katherine Heigl, if you look at, and I'm starting to refer to her as The Heigl.
Why is that?
Well, it's like the croup.
Oh, okay. Bad case of the Heigls. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. The only movie she has ever been in that's made over $100 million domestically is Knocked Up, and that was not because of her.
No. Well, you know, that happens a lot with celebrities. Like, you know, even big stars like Angelina Jolie, when you look at the films that she's done, she hasn't been in a lot of hugely hit
movies. Her successes to fail ratio is not good.
No, she's been in a lot of crap.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. And then people are like, well, New Year's Eve was a Katherine Heigl movie. I'm like, no, it wasn't.
I mean, didn't even know she was in that. Really?
I forgot she was in it. And she's, yes, she's in it.
Oh, okay.
That's like saying Valentine's Day was an Emma Roberts movie. It wasn't an Emma Roberts. I heard she was in it, but it wasn't that.
Right.
The closest you would have gotten with, like, Valentine's Day was maybe you could say it was Ashton Kutcher, Jennifer Garner, Anne Hathaway. Those were the big names in it. And then everybody else was side stories.
I love since you're speaking of this, I love the fact that these type of movies have become parody worthy. Did you see 30 Rock this week?
I saw the clip of Martin Luther King's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see that clip.
I love that it's become like a genre unto itself with like these holidays where like everybody's scrambling to get a date.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So maybe that's going to kind of be the end to it because I had such big hopes for Valentine's Day, or was that what it was called?
The first one was Valentine's Day last year, and then New Year's Eve was this year.
I had big hopes for Valentine's Day. I thought it was a great, because it had that awesome song, I got a feeling. I loved that song at the time, and I liked, Ashton Kutcher's one of my, like, guilty pleasures.
Sure.
I just think he's charming and adorable, and I liked everybody who was in it. So I wanted to see that movie, and I wanted to like it, and then I finally got it, and it was just such a turd. I was so disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. New Year's Eve wasn't as good because New Year's Eve, it was they were trying too hard because New Year's, there's nothing to romanticize about New Year's Eve.
No, it's awful. It's puke and vomit.
Puke and vomit and maybe some drinking
and hard drugs. And trying to get home at like 2 a.m.
And like getting laid by people you don't even know their last name.
Right. Ugh, there's nothing good about it.
But yeah, the whole thing with Katherine Heigl is she's not a big star. And I have a friend who wrote a piece on a website called Poptos, and he was talking about, he was defending Katherine Heigl and comparing her to like Jennifer Aniston, who's terrible anyways. They're both awful.
Yeah.
But the difference is that Katherine Heigl, here's where I think her failure is, and this is why her movies are going down, is every movie she makes, her co-star is at least She none of her co-stars are more famous than she is.
Oh, gotcha.
He's not a bigger star. Because if you look at stuff like The Ugly Truth, she was with Gerard Butler, and he really wasn't a big romantic comedy guy. Killers, Ashton Kutcher is probably the closest you've got. But like Life as We Know It was with Josh Duhamel, who's not a big draw.
Yeah.
One for the Money is with Jason O'Mara, not a big draw. 27 Dresses with James Marsden, not a big draw.
What?
Yeah, I mean these are 20. Knocked Up obviously was, you know, Seth Rogen, but that was just her big break, and it had nothing to do with her. You could have put any pretty girl.
It was kind of both of their big breaks too, so neither of them were really either bigger than the other at that point.
Well, but if you look at there is not a single poster of Knocked Up without Seth Rogen on
true.
It. But there are plenty of posters for Knocked Up that did not have Katherine Heigl.
Interesting.
In them. Yeah. So, anyways, so she's. I think she's done for. I think she's run herself into the ground. This is the end. They're not going to make another one for the money.
Well, you know, the thing about this movie too is it had such a strong fan base, not a huge fan base, but a really devoted fan base, and everybody who read the books said, "That's not the character. That's not her at all. I'm not going to go see this movie."
And the fans did go because when I went and saw it, I saw it on Friday morning, like at 10, and it was just nothing but women in their 50s and some of their husbands.
Well, and this movie also reminded me of one of my favorite kind of bad movies from the 90s, V.I. Warshawski. God, have you seen this movie recently?
No, but again, Rob Hunter mentioned it because he used it as saying it was another one that was supposed to be this big, oh, they could do tons of movies of this, and it went nowhere.
Yeah, because it was a series of books. It is basically, it's the same kind of thing. If you see this movie, it's classic, like, 90s goodness. Like, you know, there's Teamsters in it, and it's just everything great about the 90s, like the early 90s. So it's on Netflix Instant, so I highly recommend that over One for the Money. Just go to Netflix Instant and watch V.I. Warshawski.
And it was back when Kathleen Turner was, like, super hot, whereas now she was like Franklin Jella.
Okay.
She turned fast, where she was just, you know, Franklin Jella was young, sexy, gorgeous, and then, boom, fat, old, and... teardrop shape.
Yeah. Well,
just overnight.
She keeps saying she has a disease too that like makes her fat and weird. I'm like, yeah, it's called getting old. Yeah, exactly.
I have a disease too. It's called I can't stop eating.
Well, when she did Serial Mom, you know, she was a little more curvy in that movie.
Yeah, and then she still looked okay.
She did, but she after that movie, she went on. I remember specifically she went on some talk show, and she said, "Oh, you know, I wanted to look a little curvier and a little more maternal, so I put on a little bit of weight for this movie." Mm-hmm. And because she had slimmed down a little bit, but then right after that, she just exploded again. And so you know that it was just like she had put on some weight and she still decided to do this movie. But then somehow she had lost some and she was saying she gained weight for the role. You don't gain weight for a one of those movies, for Serial Mom. It's not like you're doing Raging Bull. You're not going to put on weight for Serial Mom.
I put on weight all the time.
For roles?
But it has nothing to do with getting acting roles.
Right. Yeah, that's why I keep putting on weight, just waiting to get a role. I don't know what the role is, but if they want a fatty, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? I'm looking her up on Wikipedia, and Kathleen Turner, it said she had rheumatoid arthritis.
Which that doesn't make you
does
fat.
Not make you fat and ugly.
No. Oh, we're so mean.
I know. I'm awful. But the thing is, and then it says she like went into remission. But no, I don't know. I think because my great aunt had rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, she like from when she was like 15. And I mean, she did not look like Kathleen Turner does now.
Right.
And speaking of fat old women, because since we're offending, let's offend everybody.
My favorite game.
I'm sure you've by now watched the Kristen Bell sloth video.
Yes.
Yes. What are your thoughts on that one?
I found it adorable.
Okay.
I'm easily charmed. I love her. It's still Veronica Mars to me.
Yeah, and what's funny, and here's the thing is, I'll totally admit, it's very cute and adorable, and you know, God bless her for having the balls to let Ellen show that.
Right.
And in fact, I thought the funniest part of it was when Ellen says, well, let's bring out the sloth, and she starts to break down right there at set. And I'm like, that actually was the best part.
It is really cute.
But here's the thing. This is the danger for all you guys out there who think, oh, Kristen Bell's so hot and cute, and she is. She's adorable. This is the danger of dating somebody like that.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's the way they are. It's adorable on this 15-second video they showed. But could you imagine dealing with that all the time? She gets a pass because she's adorable. Imagine if she was old, fat, and 50.
Oh, true.
And that was the video you saw. Not so adorable now.
Yeah, that's a good
point. But guess what? Kristen Bell's going to get fat and 50 at some point. It's not going to be so much adorable.
That is a good point, but you have to keep taking it in the context, too, that Dax Shepard is coked out of his mind all the time. So
well, of course. That's why I have no sympathy for him, because he's Dax Shepard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's just paying it forward at this point. But I'll tell you, it's sort of like the psycho girlfriend, you know, the Nancy from Sid and Nancy kind of girlfriend.
Right.
The extremely oversexed, crazy, emotionally insane girlfriend. That's sexy until they get old and fat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's, you know, it's like there is something appealing about the girl that just loves you just so much that she's ready to kill herself. You know, and I know I have a friend who used to date somebody like that. And she was, I mean, I didn't think she was gorgeous, but she was attractive. She had really pretty eyes. She sort of had this Olivia Wilde kind of cat-like Ooh. Look to her.
Yeah.
Not as pretty as Olivia Wilde, but I mean, this girl, but she was absolutely psychotic. I mean, one point, this is a true story. He was going to break up with her. Oh no, she was arguing about something. And I said, you got to stick to your guns. He was at my place. And I'm like, you got to stick to your guns. And he's like, no. And I go, no, you got to stick to your guns with this, because if you lose this argument. And it was something that it was like not unreasonable for him to stick to his guns. Okay. I won't even go into the details of that.
Okay.
And so then she's like, well, then we're over. And he's like, I guess so. And then she hangs up on him. And I'm like, and it's like, well, she said she broke up. And I'm like, does she have a key to your apartment? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, why don't you go over there? And he says, and he's like, oh, no, she would never go in. There's no way. Now, and this is the thing with my friend. Whenever he says this would never happen.
It's going to happen.
It's damn well going to happen. Mm-hmm, I said, right. Just go over there and check it out. So he goes, and I didn't hear from him, and I knew about how long it takes to drive to his place. And I call him, and I hear this scuffle. He's like, Kevin, girls. I go, what's going on? She's got a knife. I go, call the police. And he's like, well, really? I'm like, yes, call the police. And they had to come and intercede. And what had happened was he had come into the house, come into the apartment. She had indeed let herself into his place, which, by the way, is technically breaking and entering. If you break up with someone, you can't just walk. Even if you've got a key, you're not allowed to go in. And he found her completely naked in the kitchen with a knife and smoking a cigarette. Now, she wasn't going to use it on him. She was a cutter. Which, of course, is that's what you always want to look for in a girlfriend.
Right.
But yeah, it's like, and there's a certain amount of sexiness to it, because that is, I mean, there's a certain danger sex appeal to that.
Oh, yeah.
But only because she was like in her early 20s.
Of course.
If she were 45 or 50 and looked like and had the body of me, not so appealing.
Right.
So,
now, I'm sure... My mom told me about my she was at a pool party one time, and one of the
a pool party, not a key party, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It was a pool party, and one of the people there, this woman, it was my uncle had been dating this woman, and I was like, oh, my uncle's dating? She's like, oh yeah, I guess so, because he hadn't dated in years.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, good for him. But the woman had
maybe not.
Well, the woman had some kind of attack, like some kind of cardiac arrest, and they had to give mouth to mouth, and they were doing like CPR, and they called an ambulance and they had to take her away. And I was like, oh God, that's just awful. And she was telling me the story. That's really unimportant to the story. But I was like, what does this woman look like? And the only way my mom could describe her was, she's like, well, you know, you watch The Simpsons, right? And I was like, yeah. She was like, you know that Mole Man character? And I was like, yeah. She's like, she looks exactly like Mole Man.
Only not as attractive.
Yeah. So, like, I don't even – so this woman, like, you know, was like – my mom said that she thought that she had, like, done drugs, and that's why she had had a cardiac arrest, because she wasn't even that old.
Maybe,
it's not like she was – she, like, had done – because she had been
acting – Wait, was she hospitalized for exhaustion?
Yeah, right. She had been acting really irrational at the party and, like, been really crazy and, like, jumping in the pool, and everybody was like, God, what is this woman's deal? And then she had some kind of arrest, and then they had to take her away in an ambulance. So the thing is, if she looks like Mole Man and she's crazy hopped up on drugs, what is the appeal?
What's going on? Did she just give, like, the best blowjob in the history of the world? And she just needs to do it. She's like, if I don't get my blowjob in today, I can't wake up in the morning.
Right. I just, with those big, thick glasses coming at your pubes, it's just strange.
You could always look in the ceiling.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's sort of like walking a tightrope. Just whatever you do, God, don't look down.
Good point.
Oh my god. Anyways, what do you think is going to win this weekend? Let's get back to like actual business. What do you think is going to win this weekend?
You know, Chronicles pushed so hard with the marketing. You see a commercial like every 5 minutes for this.
Yeah.
But then again, Big Miracle is a big family movie, so you kind of always have to bet on the family.
I have a feeling Big Miracle is going to win just because it's there isn't anything really out there for families right now, cuz I mean you weren't going to take the kids to go see The Gray.
Right, exactly.
You know.
So I'd put my money on Big Miracle.
I think Big Miracle is probably a good one. I mean, The Woman in Black I think has a lot of buzz to it, but it's a horror movie, but it's not a screaming horror movie. I don't know. I mean, I really think it's a horse race. Any of them could win. And any of them could completely fail. So,
but the Woman in Black is, you know, marketed to horror fans, mm-hmm. and horror and sci-fi fans are smart enough now to know that we're going to wait 6 months. It's going to be on Blu-ray. It's going to be beautiful at home. And this isn't like a movie that you have to see in the theater.
No, you don't. I mean, it's neat to see with the surround sound. It's kind of like Insidious to get the
right.
to get the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But it's just that the audiences are going to be so. I swear to you. Every audience is going to be annoying.
Yeah.
It's just going to be awful.
I'm going to skip it.
So we've now got listener feedback. Thomas from Seattle had a question that he sent in. Thank you, Thomas, for sending. And I do apologize for not getting to this last week. I had a time constraint with Rob Hunter. We had to do the show in a very limited amount of time. But his question is, why is box office performance factored into a film's Oscar chances?
It's interesting.
I think it's an interesting thing to know. In particular, because the artist is not doing very well at all at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to take first stab at this since you are the guest and I'm so gracious as a host?
Well, I'm torn back and forth because a lot of times when a movie doesn't do well, like, you know, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close didn't do well box office wise or critic wise. Am I correct?
It's doing better than The Artist.
Well, true.
But you're right. It's not performing well.
It's not
doing super well. But it's about 9/11, so no movie about 9/11 has done well.
Exactly. And a lot of times the movies that are going to be nominated for an Oscar aren't going to be, you know, big box office draws anyway.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're movies you've never even heard of. So I don't know if it is factored in. But I understand his question because a lot of times you hear these prognosticators before the Oscar nominations come out. They're like, well, this isn't doing very well, so its chances are diminished. So yeah. It seems like everybody takes it into account, but I don't know if it actually does factor. I don't think it does.
I think it's an interesting side note because I think I'll be curious to see what happens with the Artist because I think the Artist is the front runner, not because it's a fun film, but I think it has more to do with Hollywood's narcissism than anything else.
Right.
I mean, Hollywood just loves itself. And as long as it's about itself and it's doing so well, and they're like, oh, look at Hollywood. It's about us and we love it and so how great we are. Let's make it the best movie of the year. And it's done well and it's won awards. But I'm already starting to see a backlash where people are like, the Artist, fuck that. That's not as good. You know, you're seeing that sort of spew out there. Whereas, like, you didn't see that with the King's Speech. And the King's Speech did extremely well at the box office, too. It just makes it more noticeable. I think that has a little bit to do with it just because Hollywood, it's not about whether it's the best movie of the year. It is a popularity contest. And now it can work in one way or the other. I think that the Academy might be like, well, people should see this, so let's go ahead and vote for it. I think part of the reason why the Artist is winning a lot of awards is also partly because no one wants to be – everyone, even though it's a secret ballot,
right.
No one wants to be the person who votes against it.
True. I can see that.
So I think that it may not be getting this overall passion, but it just tends to be getting a lot of votes. But I think it's poor box office and even more importantly, sort of like a backlash of like, oh, no, it shouldn't win that much, might hamper its award chances. And if it doesn't, I think The Help is like next in line to win.
You know, but, speaking of The Help, completely off the cuff, not related to what we were talking about, but I was listening to some show the other day, I can't remember, some podcast, and they said they were reading Joan Rivers' tweets, and Joan Rivers sent a tweet out about The Help, and her tweet said, I fell asleep during The Help. Did they ever get that house clean? I love her.
She is funny. I do like
her. She's such a 90-year-old bitch, but I just adore her. I thought that was brilliant. But I did see The Help recently, and what you were saying, it makes sense. I see what you're saying because people don't want to vote against something that's popular for fear of being left out of the game. I think a lot of times that's what the voting comes down to for the Oscars. Like a lot of times,
I think
they
can go to cocktail parties and they can be like, "I voted for the artist." You know what I mean?
Right. And
or if it wins, they can be like, "That's what I voted for."
Yeah, exactly. Or they don't want to be
where
like
they
one
can
person.
Lie. That's the point. They can lie. They can just say, "I voted for that," not have voted for it. But you know, nobody's out there going to check.
Right. A lot of times people don't want to be the person who's going to vote for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close because it's not doing very well at the box office. They're like, well, I don't want to put my money behind, you know, this sad sack loser who's going to come in last, obviously. So they've kind of already set it up to fail, so they're not going to let it win, even if it was a good movie, which it's not.
Yeah, I think you're right in this, but I don't think it's not completely tied to it, because take, for example, the 2010 ceremonies, which were for the movies that came out in 2009. Avatar was obviously the top grossing movie of that year.
Right.
And The Hurt Locker won.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of, and that's the thing, that's I think what the artist has going against it is, by now the artist has gotten enough attention. Everybody knows what it is. Everybody knows what it's meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little justification to say, well, I want to vote for it so more people see it.
Oh.
You know, so I think that cobbles its chances a bit. But then again, it's Hollywood's narcissism. If you're going to put money on it, put money on it on that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to see it, but more power to you if you do.
Well, it's silent. You wouldn't like it. No. Silence in black and white.
Exactly. I a lot of times I never watch a movie. I rarely ever watch a movie when I'm watching a movie. I'm always at my computer or on my phone, or I'm up and I'm getting a drink or doing whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no way I could sit through that film.
Yeah. Yeah. So... yeah, so I mean, bottom line, Thomas, box office comes into play, but I don't think it's not a determining factor. And sometimes it is big movies that win, but sometimes it actually works against it. Like I said, Avatar, I think, because it was so popular, it had trouble. It was going to have trouble winning. So.
Right, I completely agree.
Let's move on. Let's do the Fat Guy 5.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, bitches. This one is... 5 favorite ghost movies in honor, of course, of The Woman in Black. So the first one, here, I'll let you take this first one.
Well, the first one is one of my favorite movies and favorite genres of movie, found footage, that's Paranormal Activity. I had to put it on the list, which technically not a ghost, it was a demon. We have to qualify that so you don't get letters.
Okay. Are you one of those people who'd be like, 28 Days Later is not a zombie movie. It's an outbreak movie.
Okay. Dead on impression of me, A.
That's exactly how you sound when you get ramped up.
Yeah. But so, yes, I am specific about those things. So this wasn't technically a ghost, but it fits all the parameters of a ghost movie. You know, it's like a haunted house film. And I thought it kind of revived the horror genre. I think a lot of people were, in my opinion, a lot of people were scared to put any money into horror films, and then they made this movie with a really low budget with just a really strong script, and it did well, and people were like, oh, that's what we can do. We don't need a lot of CGI and a lot of big investments. We can just make a real...
now we got all of those movies.
Exactly. That's bound to happen, but I think it did great things for the horror. It kind of reinvigorated the horror genre in general.
Mm-hmm. So it saved it from Saw, which was falling apart.
True.
Yeah. So the next one is Ghost.
Brilliant.
Starring Patrick Swayze, who's now living the role.
Best Picture nominee.
Too soon? Is that
No, it's just soon enough, I think.
Yeah, exactly. This was a great movie, and it was a breakout hit because it was... And the thing is, again, it was a romance. That's what made it work. Women love paranormal romance, and some guys do, too. But the paranormal aspect to the romance is what it does to paranormal romance much better than the Twilight movies.
And it was funny as hell, too.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg won an Oscar for it.
Brought it. One of my favorite, that whole scene at the bank. Like, by the way, how are Bobby and Snooki doing? Now, Mama took all the money she made in the oil wells, and she sunk them into the gas pumps. It's very lucrative. Can I keep this pen? Thank you so much.
You sound like Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I know. That's my fat black lady impression, which is just Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. So Ghost, that was a great movie. That was definitely... And do you know the Ghost is like 22 years old?
It's so weird, and I saw it in the theater. I still remember that. I had, what's his name? Tony Goldwyn?
Yeah.
How can I remember that? I never remember any name, but I do know.
Yeah, wait, where did that come from?
Well, I just remember on Entertainment Tonight an interview with him because he's part of Metro Goldwyn Mayer. He's a descendant. He's the grandson of Goldwyn.
Yeah.
And so that's how he got the role. But he did great, too. It's not like it might have been nepotism, but he was so scary in that movie.
He's a director now. He directs stuff.
Oh, good for him. So he actually is talented.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not wild about his directing. I've seen a couple of his movies. I'm not wild about his movies. But, you know, I respect the fact that he does direct movies and doesn't make a big deal out of him directing movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't know. It's until it was like one of the movies he directed was The Last Kiss with Zach Braff.
With Mandy Moore or
no. It was Jacinda Barrett was in it and Rachel Bilson.
Oh, Rachel Bilson. See, yeah. I always think she's Mandy Moore. Rachel Bilson.
She looks nothing like Mandy Moore.
I don't know why, but I think they look a lot alike.
They have boobs, both of them, and that's about it.
Yeah,
they're very different women.
That's
anyways,
where I stop.
But yeah, so so he directed that, and you wouldn't realize it until you like are watching the DVD and you watch the special features, and you're like, oh, that's him. It's the bad guy from Ghost.
Yeah, that's how what he'll always be.
Yeah. So, the next movie is The Sixth Sense.
Awesome. Also, Best Picture, right?
It was a Best Picture nominee. I believe.
Also saw it in the theater.
M. Night Shyamalan before he did The Last Airbender.
Right.
The Sixth Sense is a great movie, and what's funny, and I think we can talk spoilers in case you haven't seen this, which you should because it's like 13 years old.
Yeah, get on it, people.
Anyways, what's interesting is this was one I thought was brilliantly marketed. Now, everyone's always talks about, marketing's the way to do it, because people say that's why The Devil Inside did well, because it was brilliantly marketed. I don't think that's why. I think people just love that kind of shit, you know? The marketing for The Sixth Sense was brilliant because it actually used the marketing to its advantage, because if you watch the movie, you see the lines where he's like, I see dead people. But if you watch the movie, he never says that until it's like an hour into a movie before he actually admits that he sees dead people. But because you've seen the trailers, you know exactly what's happening.
Oh, that's smart. And, you know, if I recall, too, the trailers weren't like they were today, where it's like, you know, watch The Sixth Sense and don't catch the twist that you'll never see coming.
Yeah.
They didn't do that in those trailers either. It was just like, you didn't know what was you were expecting.
Well, and the whole thing is the whole line where he says to Bruce Willis, because of course everyone knows, like I said, spoilers, he's been dead. So the whole thing is that scene where he's telling Bruce Willis in the movie where he's like, I see dead people, but they don't know they're dead. And I remember listening to Shyamalan talk about that in an interview. He's like, he's giving it all away right in that scene.
Right.
Because he's telling Bruce Willis, I see dead people, they don't know they're dead, and they're just trying to help somebody out. It's you, asshole.
Right. Now,
I mean, that's the only thing they do. But the whole thing is because they play that line in the trailer where he says, I see dead people. They don't know they're dead, blah, blah, blah. We're predisposed to already know that.
Right.
So when you see the movie, when he mentions it again, it's not so obvious. Because I remember Shyamalan was saying, he's like, I was afraid everyone was going to guess it by that point.
Now, did you guess when you saw the movie before the ending?
No, I didn't.
Thank you.
No.
I am so sick of these people now. That say, you know, go back and say, oh, I totally saw it coming. You could tell as soon as he's sitting there and with the mom and neither of them are talking to each other. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. Fuck you right in the face. No, you didn't know.
Well, it's so easy because people are, I saw that. I knew that was happening. And I see people do that too. Like, I'm going to pick on Meryl here for a minute. Like when Lost stopped airing, when they did their last, she's like, I knew what was, I guessed it. I'm like, what'd you guess? He's like, I guessed that it was a dream. I'm like, no, the last season was sort of like was an alternate. I said, no, that's not the whole thing. There's a lot more to the story than guessing this one little aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, and people guessed it was a dream in the first season. So that's nothing to brag about.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, next one. This is yours. This is your suggestion.
Wait,
you didn't remember this was the name of it. Cary Grant?
Oh, yeah, Topper. I couldn't remember the name of it, but I do remember loving this movie. I was addicted to AMC when I was a kid, when I was like 10 years old. That's all I watched. And I remember a scene specifically in this movie where Cary Grant and the female lead, they're both running in opposite directions, and they run through each other, and they swap clothes. She's wearing his suit, and he's wearing her evening gown, and then they have to go back through, and they have to change them. And so it was just a charming little cute movie. I don't like a lot of older black and white movies, but Cary Grant, you can't argue with the charm and pure delight that comes with any Cary Grant film.
Oh, yeah, yeah, very much. Archie. Archie is a great guy.
Oh, yeah, right. And Bringing Up Baby, it's another one of my favorites. Yep. He's brilliant.
Yep. So Ghostbusters is the last one, of course. You can't have a ghost movie without Ghostbusters. I remember seeing Ghostbusters in the theater when I was like 12 or 13. It was such a great movie, and it was, people forget this now because, you know, effects have changed in the last 25, 30 years. It was as much a big budget special effects movie as it was just a comedy.
Oh, absolutely. And it holds up to this day too.
Oh yeah.
It looks really good when you watch it again. It still looks great.
Yep.
And the comedy was on par, and also it was raunchy. It had that 80s ability to be raunchy. You could never get away with a ghost blowjob in a PG-13 movie today.
Yeah. 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 Not, yeah. Was it even PG-13?
I think it was PG, actually.
I think it was PG because I think it was before the PG-13 rating came out, because it was 84, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was 1984, which was the summer. That was the summer that caused the PG-13 rating. I don't know. You're younger than I am. But it was Gremlins,
mm-hmm.
and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
And Goonies, right?
No, Goonies was a PG-13. No, Goonies was PG, actually.
Oh, okay.
Goonies was PG. But it was Gremlins. It was the Gremlin in the Microwave.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the ripping the heart out of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom that caused people such stress. That is what created the PG-13 rating. And what's funny is when I showed, like, back in 2008, before the new Indiana Jones movie came out, I showed my kids the other movies, and they were pretty young at the time. I mean, they were, you know, what, like five and seven.
Right.
And I said, and we're coming up to that scene, and I pause it, and I say to my kids, and I said to my, I go, well, this scene is pretty graphic and violent. And they're like, well, I said, maybe we should fast forward through it. And they're like, well, what happens? And I kind of just go, he rips his heart out and then sends him into a big pole of lava. And they're like, oh my God, we need to see that.
Of course. I showed it to them. Kids today.
I know. They're like, they don't care.
But of course, they can't handle a blowjob in a movie.
Yes. Or cunnilingus. Cunnilingus is even worse.
Right.
In movies.
Kids today.
Because that. And the thing is, it's not that cunnilingus is bad. I think that the MPAA just is like, they're doing it wrong.
Right. They just want people to get in right positions. You're hurting your back that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, let's go to a break, and after we'll go off on cunnilingus. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's how I like to leave.
All right.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. What time is it? I believe we're here for the DVD roundup.
Very good. That's right. Now, you can always go back and listen to the middle segment if you're out there on the radio land and you want to hear us. But now we're going to move into the DVDs. We got a whole bunch. So go ahead and you start. You start, Foz.
Well, there's a couple. There's one that I missed last week, which, you know, I'm a huge fan. Paranormal Activity 3 is on DVD and Blu-ray now.
I think you've mentioned Paranormal Activity a couple times in the show already.
Yeah. So I haven't got that yet, but I did see it in the theater. I loved the third one. I thought it was really, really well done. A step up from the second, which I also enjoyed. So I'm looking forward to that.
You said step up. I could imagine a Paranormal Activity / step up crossover would be.
If it's in 3D, yes, yeah. I would so be there. Right. And the other ones, there's a Hitchcock and Woody Allen Blu-rays coming out this week.
Actually came out last week.
Oh, that's right.
They're Blu-ray releases of Annie Hall and Manhattan, both from Woody Allen. His earlier stuff, when he was still casting himself as a romantic lead,
right.
Which that doesn't work. And then there was also The Apartment that came out on Blu-ray, which is a fantastic film with Jack Lemmon and Charlie.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
Billy Wilder won the Academy Award. And then some Hitchcock movies. You've got Spellbound, Notorious, and Rebecca. All three of those are out on Blu-ray for the first time. Those are great movies. You know, the transfers aren't fantastic, but they are on Blu-ray, so you get a nice presentation of the shows.
There's sometimes when I'll pop in, you know, I'll just have a day at home, and I sit and I watch Woody Allen movies, and I'm like, oh God, I love New York. This is what New York's all about. Meanwhile, I'm sitting in New York in my apartment, watching how beautiful it is instead of being
isn't
out.
Isn't it great where you can walk outside and see New York?
Yeah, but it's better to see it on Blu-ray. It's more real.
But it's
more
not
real.
Black and white, because Kin's Manhattan was, of course, shot in black and
right.
white. It was about him, it was the... What I think's funny about Woody Allen, and you see this in Manhattan, is he kind of makes fun of his own audience. He makes fun of the pseudo-intellectual.
Right.
Which is exactly the audience that loves his movies.
True. Now, Manhattan is the one with where he's dating the oddly young girl in the film.
Yeah,
right?
He's dating Muriel Hemingway.
Who's like
17.
Awkward. But yes. Yeah. I love that movie, though.
Watching those movies now make you so glad he didn't cast himself in Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Yes.
Anyways, other ones, there's actually a lot of great ones coming out. There's Drive, one of the best movies of last year.
So
there's
you
also
say. I've never
seen
it. It's
a great movie. Yeah. I don't know if you'd like it. There's also The Thing, the sequel or prequel, which is, it's not great, but it's a lot better than it could have been. And I found some certain things that I did enjoy in The Thing. There's Treasure Buddies, which is the latest Air Buddies movie, you know, little cool puppy dogs. They're doing a sort of Indiana Jones-y kind of looking for treasure in the desert type thing. There's The Big Year, which is it's a neat movie simply because it's Jack Black, Owen Wilson, Steve Martin. It's a really good cast about bird watching, birding, which is the politically correct term. Not a terribly interesting subject matter, but the cast alone kind of makes it charming.
Okay.
Anyway,
the trailers looked really good for it, but yeah, I didn't know if anything good came out of the film.
It's not a bad movie. It's just a completely boring, disinteresting subject unless you're into birding.
Okay.
There's The Double, which stars Richard Gere and Topher Grace in a sort of CIA spy kind of thriller. Not great, but sort of like for that. I guess it came out in New York and L.A. and it went nowhere, but it's going on Blu-ray now. I actually thought it was kind of good. It didn't get great reviews, but I thought it was an interesting take on sort of the spy, sort of a, you know, internal spy drama. Also In Time with Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried, and where time is a commodity. That's one of those Occupy movies that, like Tower Heist, which came out, that kind of fits right into the Occupy movement.
Oh, right.
You know, about people who hoard money. To Kill a Mockingbird comes out on Blu-ray.
Love that movie.
Yep. Neat little packaged Blu-ray book, first time. There's Dream House, which is an okay movie if you don't watch the trailers.
Oh, that Dream House. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's another Dream House that's on Netflix now. I think it's a foreign film. That everybody seems to be talking about. But this is the one where it's 007.
Dan, I was going to say, don't say what you saw from the trailers, because the trailers literally tell you everything that happens until the last 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah,
I won't.
I mean, literally tells you everything. Daniel Craig and his wife, Rachel Weisz, are in it. And then Pac-Man, the complete first season, which is an old TV show, a cartoon from the 80s of the Pac-Man.
I remember that well. I loved that cartoon, and they had a serial that came out at the same time.
Yeah, I watched that cartoon. I was showing it to my kids, and I'm like, I remember this part, and then when this part shows up, they're like, hey, there it is. I'm like, that's the only part I ever remembered from the show.
Yeah, that happens with the old Jim cartoons. I'll have weird random memories of like one moment, and it'll be dead on.
Yeah, exactly. And then the stinker of the week is Texas Killing Fields. I so wanted to like this movie. It stars Sam Worthington and... Denny Duquette from Grey's Anatomy, who also played the comedian in The Watchmen.
Why did you want to like that? It sounds awful.
It sounds like an interesting... I like crime thrillers, but this one, it's just so bleak and heavy, and needlessly bleak and heavy. I mean, yeah, it's dealing with murder, sure, so it's dark subject matter, but I have a pet peeve when Hollywood portrays anybody who is not rolling in money as being drab, boring, and completely humorless.
Yeah.
And that's what the entire... And because you and I are not rolling in money, and we're not drab, boring, and humorless.
We are a hoot.
We are awesome. That's why you're... That's for those of you who are listening, you'll agree, because you actually made it to the end of the show. The wrap-up. Big Miracle was a kind of rocks, kind of sucks. Somewhere in the Middle, Chronicle gets a preemptive suck because it didn't screen it, and The Woman in Black gets a kind of rocked. Next week, we've got Journey to the Mysterious Island, Safe House, Star Wars Episode 1 in 3D, and The Vow, not in 3D. I still don't want to see it. Fozzie, you got about 25 seconds. Tell us where we can reach you, get a hold of you, and we'll give you a big thanks, a shout out. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for having me on your 250th episode. You can always find me on Twitter, at Fozzie Bear. That's FOZZIEBARE. And if you want to read my blog, you can go to iwanttoworkfortheonion.tumblr.com.
Yay! Thank you again, Fozzie, for being on the show, and I hope you feel better.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. I had a blast.
Bye.